Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith representing the appellant, Barbara Temple, and I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This is a domestic relations case. The trial court abuses its discretion in the division of property or in making a determination of maintenance if it doesn't properly apply the statutes. And the court in this case violated the statutory provisions of 2609.080 and 090 in several different ways. First of all, it improperly determined the length of the marriage, saying that it was 4 years rather than 10 years, even though the parties agreed that it was 10 years. Under marriage of Terry, that is reversible error. It also relied upon, and in making that determination, it relied upon marital misconduct, which was basically what was being argued by the respondent throughout in this case, and in particular on Exhibit 301, which was a note that Ms. Templin had written to herself 5 years before the parties separated. The court also failed to recognize that because the husband throughout the marriage had been inadequately compensated, and this was true by the admission of the husband's own expert, who was allowed to testify even though he was not revealed until the middle of the trial, that the court relied upon the fact that no community property or little community property had been developed to give more property to the husband. The wife was left at the end of this marriage, and these parties are both.
Didn't the trial court find that there was enough of his separate property converted to community property to compensate for any underpayment for his services?
No, the finding was that, well, the court found that there had been gifts from the separate property, but it didn't find that it was sufficient to compensate. And in fact, if it had, that reasoning was inappropriate under the statute. That would have been a reason to provide more property to the wife, not less. And the argument that was made below was that, in fact, the consequence of that, and this is supported by Byerly v. Calley, should have been that there was a community component to the business, which was the most significant asset. And, in fact, what the court found instead is that that was a reason to award the wife less community property because of that.
Going back to Exhibit 301.
Yes.
It was admitted as substantive evidence?
It was admitted, well, there was a motion in limine. The court said that it was admitting it for purposes of credibility, but as we've set out in our briefing, how it was used was to show that, in fact, the wife had engaged in improper conduct. And we've set out in our brief over and over again that was the reason that was provided. And it's also quite clear from the findings that were made on reconsideration that the trial court determined that the parties had a 4-year relationship rather than a 10-year relationship, and the date from which she found that the relationship had ended was the date that this note had been written. And I want to point out how really ridiculous that was under these circumstances. Mr. Clavano found this note within months of it being written. These parties continued to live together.
I'm puzzled by your statement that court found this to be a 4-year marriage, because paragraph 2.4 of the finding says the parties were married on May 4, 2003, and paragraph 2.5 says the party petitioner respondent separated on July 22, 2013.
And in the findings that were made on the wife's motion for reconsideration, and I'm quoting here, the trial court found that its decision was justified on the grounds that, quote, this was a short-term marriage of 4 years. That's at CP 2348. And under Terry, that is grounds for reversal. We're asking that this matter be remanded to a different judge because, frankly, I don't think that this judge, although I think she tried hard, can make a decision in this case. And I point out that the Muhammad and custody of our cases are both family law cases, and the intermediate appellate courts and the Supreme Court have recognized that these particular types of cases are ones in which it's very difficult for a court on remand to make a determination. This court did not apply the statute. She was wrong on the duration of the marriage. She failed to consider the economic circumstances of these parties at the end of a mid-range marriage, and given their ages and the amount of time that they have left to to reinstate their lives, if you will, and she relied on marital misconduct, which is expressly prohibited under the statute, both with regard to property division and maintenance. And therefore, we're asking you to remand to a different judge, to award attorney's fees on appeal, and to give us another opportunity to have a fair and equitable division made. Unless the court has additional questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes.
Your Honors, before we begin, I just want to clear up a few things, if I may. First, am I correct that even though I am a cross-appellant, I'm not able to reserve time?
That's correct.
Second of all, if the court will indulge me, I'd like to take a moment to clear up this disagreement we've been having about what Ms. Clavineau's hourly rate is.
Okay, before you do anything else, when I hit this button again, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes.
To the record, so we'll know who you are if
Thank
you listen to the tape.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Nelson Berry. I represent Jim Clavineau. May it please the court. I just wanted to take a moment to clear up this issue about the discrepancy about her hourly rate. And as I was preparing for this, I came across Exhibit 581, which is Ms. Templin's retirement account. It indicates that her date of hire is 6/15/82, so her 35th anniversary will be this next week. Anyway, that's what that's all about.
82 is her year of hire? If I
yes.
add 35 to that, I get a 7.
Well, maybe that's what it would be, 2017 then. But that's where I found the discrepancy on this issue.
Before you get into your argument,
yes,
the court sent out a request for comment last week. We received a response from Ms. Templin's counsel, but none from you. And my question is, do you have anything to add to that response?
I'm sorry, we responded by email, but basically we agree with what they said.
By email to this court?
Well, I apologize for that. In any event, we were just responding to the court clerk's inquiry. That's what I thought it was, but in any event, I didn't realize that we needed to prepare a written response.
But why don't you just let me know what you... Is there any substantial disagreement with what was set out?
The only thing that we disagreed with was when they said that the summary of the what the court did on the property division was on page 26 of their brief. We don't agree with that, but we do agree otherwise with the discussion.
So there, if I understand correctly, both sides agree that Exhibit 1 to the decree accurately reflects the court's division of property, among other things.
Yes.
Okay.
Not what appears on page.
I understand.
Okay.
We seem to be interrupting you, so I'm going to continue
right.
the pattern.
Sure.
Exhibit 301, was
yes.
it admitted for substantive purposes, and what was the relevancy of 301?
As the court indicated, the court admitted it solely for the purposes of credibility, and that's the way the court used it. And that
to impeach her testimony? I'm just trying to figure if something is admitted
well,
solely for credibility, what does
also,
that mean? I guess that
also, well, also, I think the other thing is, too, is well, for example, in Exhibit 301, Ms. Templin outlines a very methodical and, I submit, diabolical plan about her plans to leave the marriage, which she, in fact, carried out almost to a T in the months leading up to the marriage. But The court expressly found, contrary, this is what makes their appeal quite so frivolous. They accuse the court of engaging in of finding fault and misconduct without providing any evidence to support those accusations. And in fact, the trial court expressly found no fault in this case, expressly found that there was no fault. And there's nothing disproportionate about these awards or anything else. And with that, so I submit that those accusations, without providing any evidence to support them, renders her appeal frivolous. Also, when Barbara complains that the court did not award her maintenance or attorney fees, even though it's undisputed that she never submitted a credible financial declaration to the court.
Well, let's back up here. My understanding of the record is that there is a request for attorney's fees at trial.
Right.
The statute sets out the legislative intent that that's to be determined on the basis of need and ability to pay.
Correct.
I don't see anything in the court's findings and conclusions that represent any consideration of those two factors.
If you will look at the denial of the second motion for reconsideration, which counsel has referred to, the court expressly says that the financial declarations that she submitted were it had excessive expenses, inflated expenses, and it's not supported by evidence. The court makes the same finding in discussing the maintenance, that the financial declaration submitted by the client was not credible and was not accurate. and as a consequence, there was no establishment of need, which was her burden. Moreover, when they say, as they do, well, the court didn't apply the statutory factors, and you just go back and you look at the findings that the court made, it's very clear that the court exhaustively went through the statutory factors. That's frivolous. And finally, when they basically challenge every fact that the trial court made, and yet when you get to their brief, hardly challenge any of them, that's also frivolous. And that's why our client is asking for fees under a Rule RAP 18.9. And let me get to this issue that she raised about the 4 years. That appears only in the where the court is denying their second motion for reconsideration regarding attorney fees. If you go back and look at what the court actually said when it was ruling on property, the court said 10-year marriage. When you look at what the court said actually on maintenance, it said a 10-year marriage. When you look at what the court first said about the request for attorney fees, the court says and expressly finds a 10-year marriage. So again, this is a frivolous argument that's taken out of context, and no doubt the court was probably maybe a little flip about because of what she thought about Exhibit 301, but it was expressly not what she was finding at the time that she was making her rulings on maintenance, property, or attorney fees.
In the cross appeal, some of it seems to be directed towards alleged discovery violations.
Yes.
Inasmuch as you're asking this court to affirm the trial decision, what's the point of that cross appeal?
Well, there's two things that come up the cross appeal. The discovery violations and things of that sort go to our claim that the court should have found that Ms. Templin and her attorney engaged in intransigence at the trial court level.
So it goes to attorney's fees now? Is that what you're saying?
Well, whether we should get attorney fees for what happened in the court below. And intransigence, by the way, began with Mr. Hall advising his client to put her name, to persuade my client fraudulently, to put her name on a separate business bank account, which she then embezzled $90,000 from a few weeks later when my client was in Hawaii, and used it to pay her attorney's retainer at the very same time that he's asking the court to award them attorney fees. And by the way,
so
the Washington State Bar Association, I'm sorry.
Use of discretion standard that the trial court should have awarded your client fees?
Should
the trial court abuse its discretion by failing to award your client fees at trial?
Well, we think on the intransigence issue, yes. Yes, because we think that the court should have awarded us fees on that. And also, with respect to this issue where Mr. Hall, you know, advised his client to take this money from my client's separate business account where he wouldn't turn over my client's privileged personal records with absent a court order, we believe that those are also ethical violations that this court needs to call out.
Isn't that a matter for the Bar Association?
Well, the Bar Association said, well, gee, unless the court says that this is bad, we're not going to do anything about it. Really? So that's why I urge you to do something about it. The other, and I'd be happy to talk more about that, but the other point that we're asking for, too, is that the $142,000 that my client used of his separate money to pay down the party's mortgage barely 3 months before the party separated should retain its separate property characteristic. As the court found over and over again, there was never an attempt by my client to transmute his separate property to community property. This is barely 3 months before the parties separate. And also, of course, we say that the postnuptial agreement also reinforced the fact that he wanted to keep things separate. By the way, we think the court erred on that because this house was bought with my client's separate property, was bought with his separate credit, and the only reason it had any community feature whatsoever is because of the postnuptial agreement, which basically created community property solely from my client's separate property. So if that postnuptial agreement is not valid, then the whole home is my client's separate property, because the determination of whether or not something is separate or not is determined at the time of acquisition and is acquired solely with my client's separate property and funds. So we're just saying that this separate property.
So are you saying that the trial court didn't have substantial evidence to support its finding that it was an intent that the down payment be a gift to the marital community?
No, so the court didn't say that. The court found that the postnuptial agreement was not valid because it
I'm not talking about why the agreement's invalid.
Oh.
I'm talking about why the court found the down payment to be community property.
The court did not. The court found that the down payment was my client's separate property. What we're objecting,
court find that it came from your client's separate property, but that it was separate our community property?
No. I think the court's confusing the two things. What the court concluded was what was separate property of my client, which she basically determined was community property, was the $142,000 that he used to pay down the mortgage 3 months before the party separated. That's what we're talking about, not the original.
Well, I'm looking at this chart here.
Right.
And
see, Rich, the $142,000 that we're talking about.
I'm seeing under the residence, right. $586,000 awarded to the husband is community property. So that means the trial court found that that part of it was community property.
What we're talking about here, Your Honor, is the $142,000 that he used to pay down the mortgage 3 months before the party separated. We're saying that should have stayed his separate property. That's where we are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Leach, I hope I can clear up that confusion. The court did, in fact, give the husband a credit for $207,000 on the down payment for the property. Their complaint is about amounts that were spent during the pendency of the marriage to pay down the...
It was a statement made during argument. That the down payment was separate property, and it may have come from a separate source, but it does not appear that the court considered the asset purchased with it, that component, to be separate, but instead considered it to be community.
It did give the husband a $207,000 credit as separate property against the value of the house. I mean, the equity in the house was over $700,000. It found only $500 and whatever it was to be separate. I want to talk about the circumstances under which my client was left.
Before you do, there's been a response by your adversary that the court did, in fact, consider need and rejected that on the basis of what it perceived to be inaccurate representations. Could you respond to that?
Yeah, there is no factual finding with regard to that. And in fact, this goes precisely to the fact that what this was being used to do is to punish my client, because what the finding says is you overestimated your expenses, therefore you don't have a need. Those are not the same thing, and there is not any determination. And I'd also like to point out that there is no acknowledgement in any of these findings or any of these spreadsheets that Ms. Templin was left with $250,000 worth of expert fees and attorney fees to pay as a result of this 9-day trial. Now, what had happened before trial? Mr. Clavano made 14 motions, and he lost virtually all of them. And he was found in contempt for doing a document dump. In many of those cases, the fees were supposed to be considered at trial. What did we get instead? We got Exhibit 301 admitted, not just for purposes of credibility, but to show motive. What on earth does that have to do with anything except misconduct? And as a result of that, as a result of this determination by the trial court that this was a short-term four-year marriage, because that's how she considered it in deciding how she was going to divide this property, my client in her late 50s is now living in her parents' basement. She got a car that was valued at the price that it was paid for it 2 years before these parties separated. She got $135,000 in pre-distributions, which were gone. Clear error under White. She got her retirement account, which was her retirement account that she had been working on since 1982. And what are we hearing here today? Well, here's how much she's making an hour. She got an equalizing payment, which Mr. Clavano tried not to pay by starting this cross appeal and then trying to stay enforcement of this judgment. This was not a fair and equitable division. Ms. Templin should not have been left at her age after this marriage in the condition that she was, especially given the amounts of assets available to her husband. And this court should award fees. It should remand to a different trial court judge. and it should do what should have been done in this case to start out with, which is an equitable division to both parties without regard to misconduct. Unless the court has further questions, I'll cede my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our last case. The court will be in recess.
All rise.